college. So, by accident. So.
Dave went to college, too.
I went to the college.
Did you go to college?
Yep.
I know we put in big capital letters. Note the location change.
Well, actually, Jennifer forgot, except that I called her today about the Passover thing. And then I mentioned that it was good that it was in, you know, in Kingston, which would easier for her to.
So it's like
So Tracy will be here. I think that clock is moving, but it's slow. Because before it was quarter of.
Whatever it's
wrong. It's at quarter to three.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look,
so, yeah, the hand is moving. So
the
second
hand is going like about one click.
I think we
want
to sacrifice it to the recycling gods pretty soon here.
Yeah, no, definitely so. Yeah. All right, we'll get moving. Tracy, like I said, Tracy's will be here any minute.
I'm just grabbing something out of my
I don't know how long I spoke to her, though. That's the problem. If I go by that, it was a while. Ron can't be here tonight. So we'll thank you, everybody, for coming. And we'll start the meeting. Call the meeting to order, and we'll do the pledge. Is that all right?
It's right over here behind me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Oh, I got to wait for Mary to come back.
You did it.
Yeah,
oh, you did it. I missed it.
Well,
I did it once already.
You're covered.
And a preschool today.
All right. The minutes. We all got the minutes emailed to us. Anybody? Somebody want to move it?
I'll move it.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Carried. 3-0. All right. First resolution. Reappointing members to the... Soil and Water Board, which would be Legislator Bartels and James DeLong. DeLong.
What's it like? DeLong.
And this was on last month, right? But we just wanted to make sure that James wanted to do it. And Tracy.
I think
is
James
okay
is going to continue for now. I think he has trouble. Because they meet sometimes in the morning and sometimes in the evening. And
oh,
I
part
think
of
the
summer year.
Summertime they meet at night and he can do that.
Depending on
so they're going to leave him on until something
okay
to find somebody.
And we also had another vacancy. Well, we might have another vacancy, but
we're holding off on that one.
So because they continue to serve until they either resign or replace them. So.
That person needs to be a Grange member. So we figured we would ask, since he's the Grange representative, we would ask him to recommend.
Right, we'll go back to the Grange.
When
back
he's ready.
Right. Okay.
To step down.
Cool.
So you're going to move?
Somebody want to move Resolution 83, reappointing Tracy and James?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. All right. Resolution 85. Oh, you know what? Why don't I let you guys go? This is my bad. Sorry.
Okay, Rich.
We'll bump up then and let you guys get out of here. That way you get out of here.
Just three that I can speak on.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Resolutions 160, 61, and 62. I believe that's 62. Oh, no. Oh, and 65.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
cool.
So four. Okay. So you want to start on the... Well, is 160... Do you have the resolution numbers in front of you?
I don't have the agenda.
Okay, so you tell me which one you want to start on.
Tracy,
we just start now. So.
Thank you. I'm really sorry.
I'm going to answer the agenda. I'll rip it out in 2 seconds. Maybe if I can train you guys, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sit up here.
And I was going to also take a minute and talk about the polystyrene because I couldn't make the last meeting.
Okay, yep.
Okay, cool.
Okay,
awesome.
Okay,
Resolution 160. This is very straightforward. As you know, the legislature, through the Green Fleet policy, set a goal for the purchase of Green Fleet vehicles. In 2016, we had 14 that qualified under the definition. We're purchasing another 12 this year, which will bring us to 26 Green Fleet vehicles, which we've met the goal 3 years early. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why we went in that direction is because of the availability of state rebate dollars to help support the cost of the plug-in hybrid vehicles. So with a $5,000 per vehicle state credit that municipalities are eligible for, we were able to bring the cost of those vehicles down to a standard sedan, $23,000, $24,000. So we have a bunch on order. The resolution before you authorizes the chairman to sign an agreement that accepts $15,000 or the rebate on the first three that we ordered in 2016.
Okay.
These are Chevy Volts. that you, they're being operated by the Department of Health right now. So that's pretty straightforward. It's a revenue contract for $15,000 for 3D plug-in hybrid cars. You'll see more of those throughout this year because the rebates are still available. That's one of the reasons why we maximized and we've been taking advantage of the state bid, the consolidated bid they've been doing. We have another 12 on order. And one of them is an all-electric that we're going to start experimenting with as soon as it's delivered. It'll be assigned to the Department of the Environment. We think, quite frankly, we think Amanda is the only one on our staff that could knock that one up. Knock that one up because, knock that out of the park because, imagine a circumstance where you're out in the hinterlands and you run out of, electricity. So.
Yeah, nice.
I think we think her department.
Yeah, wrap those or something. We've sort of just our seal.
Yeah, it's all about money sometimes. Yeah. We're trying to get, I'd rather buy another car, to be honest with you, than spend money. So we'll look at it.
Has the sheriff received his?
I believe they're on order, and there's a.
Is there more than one? Sheriff's?
They're getting a hybrid. There's some concern with them about with the light packages and having a with the lights on it drains the battery too much. Mm-hmm. So they're going to do like a standard hybrid as their first one, but we think we've got them talked into plug-in hybrid. Going forward, we actually, if you recall, we had won the Clean Energy Communities Award, the $250,000. We put in an application that has lots of components to it. We're looking at solar hot water for all the use at the jail. We're also looking at ozone laundry, which is a system where you basically use treated cold water to do the wash, and it's just as effective as hot water. But because of that grant, also requires an educational.
I use cold water. Yeah. Whenever I do my own laundry,
The state regs that you have to meet.
You don't want the orange to fade.
Right. But there's also this kind of a educational requirement, and we're kind of kicking around the idea of having one of the SROs take a plug-in hybrid and use it as an educational tool while he's at the school. And we're throwing that in there, and we've talked about that, and maybe put a charging station at one of the schools as part of it and use it as an educational type of a thing, and as a way to kind of meet that requirement for the grant. So. Yeah, they're still under conversation, but yes, I believe they have a hybrid on the way, and then we've talked them into more of the plug-in hybrid.
That's great.
They're using it basically on the civilian side. They're going to go to, technically the green fleet vehicles.
I've definitely seen examples. Just online where they have police vehicles with lights. Maybe not a full-out light package, but there's definitely lights on and
those are
marked
hybrids.
Vehicles.
Those are just hybrids, similar to the way you drive. They're hybrids, yeah. And at DEP, most of their officers I've seen lately, that's what they're outfitting them with, their hybrids.
Yeah, and a lot of New York City officers now are switching over.
Yep. But yeah, so again, it's going well. Again, this grant's pretty straightforward.
We're going to get more of these as the year goes on.
Yeah, you'll see more of these. So we come with the same deal. It's just basically we bought the cars and you get reimbursed. It's a rebate.
Okay.
And it brings the cost down to, again, what a standard sedan would cost with county. We're getting anywhere from 50 to 60 miles per gallon equivalent for these vehicles. We're really, it's been
great.
Terrific. Yeah,
50 or 60.
50 to 60. Yeah. In fact, we actually have one that clocks almost 70 because a lot of the driving is. Just around Kingston, there's not a lot of, electric. One of the sanitarians was telling me at the health department that when he does his rounds in Kingston, the gasoline engine doesn't even turn on. He basically charges it. It does all his rounds, makes it back, and charge. It's empty. They charge it in, and it's worked out pretty well.
And these newer vehicles go really a long way on the charge.
Yeah,
we need a lot more charging stations.
That's the next resolution.
All right, so I have a motion on 160.
I'll move it.
Legislator Bartow. Second. Legislator Wehrle. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carry. All right, 161.
I'll move it.
This is the same same state program. This one is focused on new charging equipment infrastructure. This resolution would... authorize the chairman to sign an agreement with DEC for an additional 6. So under the plan that we sketched out, there would be 2 new ones at the Business Resource Center, an additional one here at the County Office Building. It'll be not in the front, but in the back side, closer to Pearl Street, 2 at the Golden Hill Office Building, and then we're going to put one up at the SUNY Elster Stone Ridge Campus as part of this.
Any questions? questions?
That'll make two at SUNY Olson now?
That we already have them at, this will be the first one at the Stonebridge campus.
Oh, this will be
The other ones are at the Kingston Center of SUNY Olson, yeah.
Oh. Oh, for some reason I thought they were at Stonebridge too.
No, this will be the first one there.
You said two at the BRC, one at the county office. What were the other?
Two at the Golden Hill office, Golden that'll Hill. Make three there. This will make three at the BRC. And, of course, the new vehicles are being stationed in such a way. You know, actually, I brought some data to share with the committee. I know there's been a lot of conversation about usage and sessions and all that, so I printed out a I had the department make up some summary data. And I think what you'll see from the data is that there you go. Okay, I actually have enough.
Thank you.
And I've got one for the public. The it's very straightforward. So this just basically indicates all the existing stations. But the graph on the bottom, you know, compares the public sessions versus the fleet vehicle sessions. And I think that's quite frankly, as we've gotten into it, that's really, you know, illustrates where we have those vehicles stationed presently.
Yes.
So that's going to change. Once we put in these new stations and the new vehicles, it's going to lopside the other way, is what we believe. You know, mm-hmm. It'll be more fleet usage. The one concern that we routinely hear. Actually, we hear two concerns. One concern that we hear is that people with non-plug-in vehicles sometimes park in the spots. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a common concern. I think that's something that could be addressed pretty easily. The other concern would be about the station here at the county office building. We have a fleet vehicle that we tend to station there, you know, around the clock. That's where we park it. And mm-hmm. and especially on the weekends, we'll hear complaints. I think, you know, we're trying to address that in two ways. One is the second station that we're putting in will be back on the employee side of the lot,
mm-hmm.
and that's where we'll park that fleet vehicle. And then the other...
That'll alleviate a lot of concerns.
All
that's the major concern.
No, and again,
as a committee.
No, we get it. And I think, you know, we've been trying to move it on the weekends, and it's just one more thing. And you know, the public charging is nice, but we kind of put them in to service the fleet vehicles. And we didn't want to move it, on a daily, because you know how tight that parking lot is and how busy it is during the day. If we were to then pull out the electric vehicle and put it in a non-electric spot, you would then get the complaints from people that drive around five times and can't find a place to park. You know what I mean? And where there'd be two empty spots sitting there.
Right.
You know, because so we're trying to balance it. We're working through it. Again, I think putting the station over on the other side, closer to Pearl Street, and having this pool vehicle plus the this all-electric vehicle, that's where they'll park. And that'll be limited to there.
Based on the summary, I mean, other than the county office building, or the county office building, there's one charging station, or there's two? We have two,
one.
Right?
Well, two ports.
Two
for
ports,
for every one,
one station.
One, there's two ports per station. So whenever I've said six, that's really 12 additional ports.
Okay. I didn't.
That's amazing. And it's one.
And plus, also to add two, the cord also stretches over additional spots.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? And, you know, and quickly, one of the things we'll do. When we get our act together, and we have, you know, we know we need better signage and whatnot, but there's an etiquette that happens with people that drive these cars. Like, it's very common for someone to, if someone's charged up, to unplug them and put it on yours. You know what I mean? And that's an accepted thing to do. So, you know, we're going to put some rules. Again, you know, with all the conversations going on, I did know if the legislature wanted to weigh in with regard to, you know, prohibiting non-electric vehicles from parking there, because you put a policy.
We've definitely been discussing that.
Yeah, so I think, to be honest with you, that's what I would recommend is the place to go next. I think, again, the biggest complaint we've heard, and then the complaint about
the
charged
vehicles.
Again, it's just a function of there's only so many spots behind the building. If we were to take a non-electric spot, we'd get criticized for that. So we're trying, you know, because we do have several, you know, county vehicles that are stationed here at the building. And just by the nature of that one, by having that other station in the back side, I think it's going to alleviate, I think, that, you know, that concern.
You were not at the last meeting, right?
You had another meeting. You were
right.
Yeah.
So we had members of the public, and you articulated the main concerns, I think. And I've heard the complaint about that white vehicle beyond just our meeting. I mean, that's a a pretty recurrent theme, just the white vehicles there. And people's complaint isn't that it's there charging, it's that it's there not charging.
No, again, it's just a function of there's only so many spots in the back. It's the our lot is a very high demand here in uptown Kingston, right. So if we were to move that to a non-electric spot, so we're going to try to, in the interim, get it move it on the weekends in particular.
Yeah, that's
and then,
weekends
you know,
and
then, that's when it's 90%.
Yeah, that's exactly. And then,
not so much the day.
And then dress it permanently.
What about a time frame? Now, you know, that's something we discussed because I know, you know, that a lot of the EV users are conscious and they want to get, but if somebody doesn't, they can take up a spot for 10 hours now.
Yeah, you
there's no penalty.
The data's not showing that, Rich. I put a median on here because the range from you know, there's people that plugged in for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. There's some people that have plugged in for 4 hours.
Right.
I mean, depending on the type of car you have, like, for example, the kind of car that Mana drives has a kind of relatively small battery compared to some of the other ones, right?
Right, the Teslas are 4 hours, I think, the gentleman.
Correct, right. So, yeah, but quite really. But the people with the Teslas, they wouldn't tend to charge at a level two charger. This is a trickle charger. Like, if you could compare it to charging your battery on your car at home, you have that 2-amp trickle charger. That's what this is. It takes a long time versus a fast charger.
Well, but like the one gentleman, I believe, drove the Tesla because he told us his took 4 hours, and he told us a Tesla. He comes up here to charge it sometimes.
Of course,
Tesla, that guy?
His was a Volt.
Well, he said he goes.
Wasn't
he
a Tesla.
Because he said mine takes 4 hours.
Yeah. Because it's a Tesla It's a Tesla battery.
Right.
Tesla gave away its all the technology. But just said you can.
But
use
the way to think about it is the type of station that this is a level two station. It's kind of entry level. It's like a trickle charge on when you charge your car battery, versus these DC fast charger stations. You see them at Quick Check.
Right.
They're Tesla branded. You see them on the throughway.
Cosmos in Newburgh has eight charging Tesla charging. Yeah.
I think they've got it right here. Quick Check.
They do.
Washington.
They do. Yeah,
there's gotta be six or seven of them there.
Yeah,
five, six, seven.
And they're the prime spots.
Yep. Yeah. And then you'll also see them on the throughway, and they tend to be very expensive, you know, but they're also pumping the electricity in like a fire hose.
Right,
you know,
you can
plug into a Tesla station with a Tesla and charge your car in 20 minutes. That's what that does.
You know, so if somebody's traveling, they don't have to sit there for
Yeah, and in fact, we spent a lot of time looking at this. The NYSERDA has done a lot of work with EV tourism, and how do you capture this segment and make the infrastructure in such a way that they'll come visit your community and draw the rings, you know, distance that they can travel and giving them a comfort zone. And that's what we've been trying to do by putting them in our facilities. We worked with all the towns. We had them in around Thanksgiving time and did a training about, you know, you could do the same thing we did. Here's how to do it. We've had five towns take us up on it, and there are five towns that have gotten similar grant awards and will be installing these at their facilities. Plus, Worsing already has one at Lemon Park, so they're gonna grow exponentially. You know, I think that again, our main purpose was for the county fleet vehicles. The public charging is a nice addition, right? And then you promote it. Where can I promote something like this? Draw some people in off the throughway or to come up again. We have contact with the guy who is the president of the New Jersey EV Car Club Association, right? So he, you know, he tells his members, and they go, oh, you could go up to Kingston on one charge and have lunch and go home, and that's what they do. So it's nice. It's a nice
That'll
little.
It'll be like the day trip. It'll be like, you know,
yeah.
How far can I go?
Well, that's what it is.
Poker run.
And but they have circles drawn with the GPS.
Run.
So
at our last meeting, we had a man from the Albany EV group, and he was talking about like some kind of a card that you hang on the charger that says, you know, it's okay to unplug my car.
In fact, our goal here is to put that in a rule sign, if you will, and that would be something that you would do. Like, you know, that's a common thing to do. And again, this parking lot is a bad example because it's so tight back here. It's so narrow. People get upset. My goodness, there's not enough room to plug in and get around. Just we have very narrow parking lot here. But when you go to our other facilities, it's a lot more spacious, and you can actually stretch that cord, you know, up over a couple. You know what I mean? And we don't have a lot of employee usage of the chargers. You know, we have the bigger users are we lease space in some of our office buildings like Golden Hill to not-for-profits, and their employees have them. So that's where most of the it's not employee, but it's tenants usage, if you will.
Where's the station in Ellenville?
It's right at the Trudy Farber Resnick building.
The library here. Center and Canal Street.
So. Yeah, that actually gets quite a bit of use. I think you'll see the median station is a little longer. I think it's people that commute to Ellenville for work and they'll plug in and then go out at lunch and swap it out. I think that's more what happens in Ellenville.
Are each of these one station?
One station with two outlets. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that based on what we heard, just the really the solving the problem of having non-EV vehicles prohibited, mm-hmm. and then one thing we discussed, if you recall, was how what kind of right now it says that they can be towed. And so there was a discussion about ticketing, fines. Remember, what do we do? Because the tow seems harsh, but maybe just even having the threat of the tow would stop people from doing it versus actually...
I think my recommendation, if you guys were to change your policy to ban non-EVs, I would use that, you know, maybe towed. I think that, again, it stops any chance of a gasoline vehicle parking there, right? And then you do that, and I'll make sure we have appropriate signage that has some rules and kind of lay of the land for people that are less experienced to know that, you know, they can unplug and plug the next person in. Again, this one example that you see when you come here every time is not the best example because it is so tight and we're reluctant to take up another space. I mean, we could easily paint another green spot there, but again, it just takes one more general space around from the public.
And I think moving our car on the nights and weekends would completely solve the issue.
We're working
weekends.
On it.
It's not so much that. Even if the policy is Thursday night to Monday morning.
It's my hope that we'll get these stations, get this proved and get these stations and they just get it in the back and it eliminates the problem.
Right.
You know? And then you're going to get complaints that two is not enough, right? Like, that'll come eventually.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great problem.
It is. And we're going to, eventually things are going to have to change.
The private sector is going to start
charging eventually.
Just like the quick check.
Again, they
can take other vehicles, right? Not just Teslas, yes. Right?
Yeah, it's fun that we're on the leading edge. It's nice, you know, we're doing it for our own vehicles. It's nice to offer a benefit to the public. But that will change. I mean, right now, you know, the cost is not like the five towns that are putting in the stations. They're not going to charge the public. You know, like one or two got
grants.
I know Rosendale, Woodstock, Marbletown. And again, like Marbletown's not going to charge the public. You know, like Rosendale went and got a grant from the business district down there in the village, right. You know, the hamlet.
What are the other two? Do you know?
I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head, Tracy, but I can get that for you. But more will come. And again, right now, through these grant programs, we're able to, you know, we do some pretty, the software, it's all networked, it, you know, you can look at it from an app and know whether someone's charging or not, if it's free. I mean, it's really informative. That costs money. Right now, the grants cover the cost of that system, so we're going to, you know, we'll be evaluating, once our usage starts to get above an area we're comfortable, you know, maybe the decision is, you know what, let's see if we can get a bigger sponsorship. You know what I mean? Because quite frankly, a lot of people have said, you know, boy, we'd like to sponsor that. It's kind of a nice thing you're doing.
Gas stations have air hoses. They've got vacuum cleaners, and they might have a charging station, and they just charge for it.
Exactly.
Sector is going to say, well, it costs me $5,000. I can make $2,000 a year or $3,000 a year on it.
We're not at that stage yet, but that will come.
Well, the county shouldn't be making money on it.
Yeah, but that will come. It will come, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. But we're monitoring it very closely. I want to give the committee some confidence that, you know, this is a, you know, in the Department of the Environment really led the way on this. They've spent a lot of thought process on it. And, again, they monitor it very closely. I think that if you all were to change the policy to stop the non-EVs from parking there, we could handle the rest at this point. And again, keep growing it. And again, the good news is it's nice for the public, but the really good news is it's saving the county a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's really putting us on the forefront of this green fleet policy that we have is a model. Amanda has done a national webinar. She went down to Newburgh and spoke on it at a statewide conference. I mean, it's positive. So, you know.
Can I ask one last question? Yeah. In the courthouse, is that usage mostly in work hours, or is it mostly after?
It varies. I think a lot of it's on the weekends and at night. I think more, you know, I think that we had a little bit of a problem where one of our employees who was late for court would pull his EV in there. He wasn't charging, but like, oh, there's a free spot.
Which wouldn't be an issue if we were charging.
Well, I fixed that problem. I took a phone call. You know what I mean? But again, you know,
I'd heard that from employees a couple of calls.
Yeah, but again, he wasn't charging. You know, and also the whole you know people getting advantage. You know, like I said, I think he might have plugged in once when we first got it. But basically, he drives a car that's not like what most of us would drive, and he He has the fast charger at his house.
Yeah,
but
so
from
he doesn't.
The, from the public perspective, the concern about that would be about a vehicle not charging versus charging.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think that it's a nuance.
That took a phone call. I addressed that problem.
And you know, it's impossible getting that garage during the day if you're
crazy.
In the public.
Yeah.
So it's on a Monday through Friday. That place is employees and staff.
Yeah. But again, we addressed that issue, and then also just I want to put on the record too. Amanda, something she's very passionate about. She has one of these vehicles. She only lives four blocks from here. She doesn't charge here. She doesn't, you know, just you know something you know we talked about very early on that she wanted to make sure that this is something we want to do. It's just an amazing environment. She didn't ever want to be. People to think that she was somehow benefiting.
And you know
from
what?
It.
And that's okay too.
Yeah, but true. But I just want to make sure
you
that
know, I don't go to the DEP and put gas in my car.
Of course,
when I come into a meeting or something, or come to work.
Yeah, but so she doesn't use it. I think perfectly. She hooked up once the day we got it. She wanted to show us how it works.
Right, right.
And other than that, she has not used it. So you know, it's just something obviously she'd be able to and appropriate for her to use it. But just something she felt personally would be a better choice. So.
Legislator Green's got a question.
Sure.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that, I may have said this before, but one of the things that I've noticed that has changed is the charging station will tell you that space number one is the charge is complete.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an etiquette developing that you know that if it's done, you can take it out, put it back, run your card. And the other thing I wanted to suggest is if we are going to leave towing, it should be for the
gas cars.
The
gas
non-EV vehicles.
Yeah, that's what we would do.
Yeah.
That's what we would do.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be towing. It could be a $25 fine.
Yeah.
I think the big threat is better.
Yeah.
Personally,
because
you hate to see somebody get towed who's 87 years old and who's never heard of an EV station.
And the reality is, I think that knowing that our sheriff's department and our security staff at all the buildings, they'd probably opt for a warning, leave a note.
The first time,
you know, and that'll that solves nine times out of ten the problem.
Ron Lamb talked about just treating it like the handicap parking.
Correct.
That if there's a car parked there that's not handicapped, what do you do?
Yeah.
Let's do the same thing with the EVs. If you say EV only and there's an EV. Yeah.
And again, you have to put your mind around all of our parking for the whole county. It's a non-issue everywhere, but here in the courthouse. It's just very small and very popular. And again, that's why we've been reluctant to park that car, somewhere else and then have people complain that why are you taking up all these spots when there's two empty ones there? So. Again, we're trying to address that, and I think we come up with a little plan that'll solve most of the concern.
Good. All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carry 4-0. It's a heavy one.
Yeah.
All right. Ken, now we're going to go to authorizing the chairman of the legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State DEC to accept grant funds for the Ulster County Municipal Compost Expansion Project.
Yeah, this is a really exciting initiative. This is a consolidated funding application award. It was a competitive award the county won this year. This is actually our third time as a charm. We tried to get this in three times now, and we just finally got funded. It's a $261,000 grant to dramatically expand the composting operation at the RRA. The way that we've structured it is essentially the county accepts the money. We're going to take a small amount off the top, about $14,000, because we're going to implement a composting, we're going to take all the organic waste out of the jail and bring it to the RRA. So that'll be part of this. And then we're also buying a whole bunch of totes and other things and some education. Yeah. So that's the first $14,000. The balance goes to the RRA. This will fund a covered building. Expanding the expanding the capacity of their existing composting, and also it's going to pay for a large bagging machine, so they're going to be able to bag and resell the compost to the public and to the landscapers. Right now, they sell to landscapers; they do pretty well, and we think that when this is said and done, this will be definitely the largest composting operation in the Hudson Valley. Could be the largest in the state when we're all said and done.
And Delaware County's got a big one.
Yeah, this is going to be pretty big. And then we a lot of thought's been put into it. For example, when you do the composting, you need a lot of base organic material. So we're chopping up all the ash borer trees, for example, on the county right away. we're figuring out how to get that as part of this, and really we're trying to be really holistic.
You
about
know what?
It,
so. Up in Cape Cod, when you go to the transfer station, they've got all the trees that the town has cut down. They chip them, and you can go in there and shovel it for free and put it the chip wood right in the back of your pickup truck and drive to your house and put the mulch down.
Yeah.
It's all free. They comp all the trees and branches and everything that people bring there. If they're on a small lot, and they recycle it.
Though. If you think about it, about, you know, they say that 20% of your MSW is organic, right? And we're not going to get it all. 20%
of MSW.
Yeah, is basically food and organic waste.
That sounds low, too.
Yeah, but if you think about if we can, how much of that we can get off of those trucks heading out to Seneca Falls, you know, what a home run. So.
Yeah, the challenge has been facilitating, especially for the larger generators like restaurants, because the bulk of their waste is either recyclable or organics. And the organics, the challenge is getting, we've yet to find someone who, I mean, we do have some haulers that haul organics, but it's not been enough. I mean, it's not been enough that's of a coordinated, organized effort, because it's got to be made easy and affordable.
That's part
to
of
be
the,
able to pick this
that's
up.
Part of this plan is to start developing that and building on that. In fact,
putting
our
great business opportunity.
Yeah,
for
no,
someone,
it's going to be huge.
Sure, there's no question.
I mean, just the waste at our jail. It's perfect. They already sort everything out of it. It's, you know, it's ready to be composted. So,
and it's easy for a restaurant to sort. Having been in the restaurant business, I mean, your family's, you know, as you're scraping plates, if you have. You're scraping into something that's going to be picked up the next day. It's pretty straightforward. Everything goes in, shells, everything. Yeah, so just all.
Bones.
So whatever, it's a nice project. And, again, we worked, took 3 years to get it done, but you know, we finally got the CFA award on it. So.
That's
I just want to say that it took 3 years to get it done now, but some people will remember that we actually, almost 20 years ago, put in for a simple, so I'm really delighted.
Well, they've been composting there for a few years.
Yeah,
Robert started that. That was my brother Robert's program.
And it sat on the shelf, but it's wonderful to see this happening. What remind me what the capacity is?
I'm sorry, I can't quote that off the top of my head.
Okay.
Joe. Just not a number I have committed to memory.
But in terms of the economics for the hauler, having a facility, you know, moves us closer to it being a good investment.
For sure.
In Connecticut, they actually have a mandatory composting law for larger generators that live within 25 miles of a, or whose business is within 25 miles of a composting facility. And, you know, once we have enough facilities, we could think about adding,
regulating
food waste from large generators and sort of directing that. But until we do, there's no sense in going down that path because you have to have the market. And I thought that was an interesting way of approaching it. So if somebody's in Connecticut and has a restaurant or a hospital or a school, but there's no facility, then there's no penalty. They can choose to have a hauler who will truck it further, but so that would take some sort of regional planning, and I know that the Hudson Valley Regional Council has a group that works specifically on trying to coordinate various solid waste diversion efforts. But I think this is great, and as I said at Public Works, I want to just commend Amanda because Amanda Laval has worked so hard to bring these to fruition. And the in this case, the RRA is going to be the beneficiary, so that's great.
I was just curious, something that I've seen practiced outside of D.C. and Maryland, obviously a more suburb, bigger area population-wise, but what they do at their local composting facility is that local residents can actually buy in almost in terms of a membership. So if you're a county resident and you would go to the RRA with your compost come springtime when you're planting it, you get in return free dirt, free, you know, that you get like a set bag, and so it's like a membership where they bring their compost, in return they get access to garden dirt, you know, come spring time.
Yeah, I'm sure Tim Rose would be interested in that conversation. You know, he's actually built. He was telling me that he's really has a great rapport, like a lot of landscapers. Like they prefer the product that they're making there to a lot of the commercial stuff that they can buy.
Yeah. You know, the one thing about that, Jonathan, is I think it's tricky because I don't know if I've driven in the RRA unloading, you know, trash and garbage, and I think it's difficult for a lot of people to navigate if it got busy there. It's not really set up friendly for like our local transfer stations where you pull in, you empty the bags out. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think it'd be, if it got too busy with people doing that stuff, it really could pose. It'd be nice if they could do regional around the county.
It's more that you drop it off and then eventually when it comes time that, you know, they'll have prepackaged bags.
Right. I mean, it's a great idea. I just think the RRA, boy, sometimes there's tractor trailers in there. There's big haulers going in and out of that place. It's not a very.
But it could definitely follow the model of the transfer stations where you bring your organic waste to the transfer station to be transported to the RRA facility so that everybody's not driving all these individual miles.
Right, because somebody from Wild is not going to drive to the RRA.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's anything's possible.
I know where I live in New Paltz, you bring your organic waste and you can take as much as you want.
Yeah.
You know,
it's in New Paltz.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, I think, like Manis says, this, you know, having the facility is where all the possibility begins.
Yeah. That and the cats,
so
right?
That's an exciting place to be.
Yeah, no,
when is Amanda back?
She's back.
She is back?
Yeah. But I think that the key here is we're really focused on kind of this large commercial market is what we're trying to get here. I think the individual is really nice, but we're trying to get large quantities. Right. Again, the jail is a nice way to kick it off, we think. And
And it would be ideal if there's just one hauler or at least one hauler in a given area, because if you have six different haulers, it doesn't make sense for them to pick up. But if somebody sort of gets in the business of collecting food waste.
I think that's what's coming next. I think when they see the things that we're doing, that you're going to see someone step up and be like, oh, here's a business opportunity. And, you know. It'll make it so it's profitable.
I know the previous coordinator was very interested in doing a business like that before she left the previous recycling.
Yeah, so again, a lot of that thought process went into this grant application. So.
Okay. Any other discussion?
That's great.
All in favor?
I'm sorry, Mr. Moore.
Legislative Park, you moved it already.
I don't know, but I'm happy to move it.
Okay.
And second? I'm sorry, Mr.
Moore. Second.
Let's say up. Okay, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
This is such a wealth of good news.
Yeah, Rich, I have one more item if I can shoot there. And you know, I know that I had asked you and Tracy if I could come and give an update on the polystyrene foam law.
Well, is this yours too?
Which one?
The Shokan Rail Trail.
That's I can talk about it if you want to. Which one do you want to do first? Let's do that.
Let's do the resolution.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
165 authorized chairman of the legislature to execute grant agreement with New York State for the Shokan Rail Trail project, and this is planning.
I'll move it.
Barry moved it. So I just have to second it.
Okay. It's very straightforward. This is basically we're just keying up the dollars for the Shokan Rail Trail project. This is not the approval of the legislature on final plan or anything like that. This is just basically we're just lining up the various grant sources to have them ready for that. In fact, I believe I'm told, I think it's correct, that in the final budget, in addition to the additional, this is a $2 million grant, I think.
$2.3 million.
There's an additional $1 million that was just allocated in the state budget. So we have $3.3 million.
That's been there for years, right?
The $2.3 million. The $2 million was originally.
I thought Kevin Cahill had appropriated $1 million 8 years ago.
That $1 million is going to be used on the Hurley Kingston connection.
Okay.
So these are all dollars that are dedicated to the Shokan Trail.
Okay.
So again, we're getting close to, you know, $9-10 million in total grants here that we're, it almost funds itself. We're getting real close to it. So this is just lining up the paperwork for the grants. This is not the final approval of a plan or anything like that for the legislature.
Okay. Can I just ask a technical question, which might not you might not even know the answer, but why isn't the deputy chair on here too?
I don't know the answer. I didn't draft the resolution.
the deputy chair. You know how normally when it's an executive's resolution, the chair and deputy chair are the sponsors?
How is it listed, Tracy? I don't have it.
Just James Maloney. It's just very unusual.
You know what? Maybe, you know why? I bet you they sent it to the track committee. And there's no vice chair of the track committee.
But it says referred to economic development.
Oh, is there?
I am.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it says economic development is the primary.
The good news is that's a question for the clerk of the legislature, not for the deputy county executive. So okay. I don't know why it was referred in the way that it was. That's a Vicky call.
I'm curious.
Yeah.
I don't know if the deputy had a problem with it, be it John or
be honest with you, Jim may have asked to be the sponsor. That's how that happens sometimes. Because yeah, he's been very involved in the discussions because of the committee. He may have asked. I don't
Okay, any other
questions? Can I ask a question?
Sure.
It has nothing to do with this one, but do we know when the Highland Trail is, the work's going to be finished to South Street there in Highland?
Yeah, I think we're going to be before the legislature, not this month, but next month with kind of the next step, I believe.
A lot of people were asking about it.
Yeah, no, it's
going to
be great.
Some people think it's going all the way to Thruway right now, and I said, well, eventually it will be.
No, actually, if you look at the long-range state plan, basically the money, it's all lined up to bring it in front of Lowe's, South Street, and then the state's going to make the rest of the connection for us, and it's in the tip right now. They're going to go from South Street and right up, they're going to take it right up 299, and they're going to restripe the bridge. And they're going to take it across the bridge, and then that'll be our discussion about then how do we take it down to the Walco Valley. And there's a lot of discussion. As you know, we've started construction on a major 6-foot shoulder on South Park Corners Road. That if you know that intersection, it goes down in front of the high school.
Yeah,
we're putting a 6-foot lane for pedestrian and bike going all the way down to the school. So there's conversation. What's the best way to get it down to the Walco Valley? And that'll be part of the planning study that'll happen.
Yeah, are they doing that on a lot of projects, highway projects, county roads? Putting the 6-foot.
The bike road.
Well, not 6-foot, but we've been
because they just did Kaiserreich out of Rondale, and they didn't do anything there.
We did.
They didn't widen it.
Well, we added shoulders. We added a shoulder on it. Yeah,
but that's still dangerous to ride a bike.
Oh, it's not great. I mean, be honest with you that we do a lot of analysis based upon accidents and where the right place to go is, but you have constraints that you just can't.
Yeah, no,
exactly. But yeah,
so that is pretty tight.
Yeah, but that's piece of New Paltz is a safe.
And it's straight.
Yeah. Yeah, but the safe route to schools project. And the question is, once it crosses the bridge, what's the right way to take it down to the Walco Valley?
And a police department.
Yeah.
So people
go slow. Yeah, and not necessarily the village may not necessarily want them going right down Main Street in the village, which is already congested. So.
Well, I'm delighted it's going to be right past almost past my front door.
It's going to be great.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Okay. We got one more question.
Just a quick thing, I might just take a minute. I had asked. I had asked the chair and the vice chair if I could give an update on the polystyrene foam, and I couldn't make the last meeting, so it's even more of an update. So back in January, we started kind of our first full year enforcement when we did our annual inspections of all the restaurants that we regulate here in the county. At our very first pass, out of 685 restaurants, we had 111 that were out of compliance. So we started with the letters and that and kind of that enforcement. Then in March we whittled that down to a remaining 12 at the end of that process, and then over the last month we've gotten it down to zero.
Got it down to zero.
Yeah.
But.
Of course, it's a point in time.
Right.
Restaurants will certify that they're in compliance one day, and then
order something else.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where it's constant vigilance. But just to give you some more stats, I have a little document I put together for you.
That's great. So I think it's also letting people know that, reminding people it exists. You know, people forget.
It took a lot of work. But as part of this, we had seven restaurants ask us for the unique packaging waiver. We denied all seven of the requests.
We had
24 restaurants that we approved for the hardship waiver, where they were able to document with their tax return that their income was below the threshold specified in the law. Then basically that dealt with most of the 12 that were on the remaining list. They were able to get that hardship exemption. So.
Is Amanda or the folks from your department, are they in close touch with the UCRA?
With regard to what?
Okay, this is food service.
Right, this isn't okra.
Not no. The composting. Yep. But on the composting, are they working closely with the UCRA staff?
Yeah, Tim and I are very coordinated on it. We just met last week on it. So, yeah.
Sorry, this is food waste reduction.
No, the composting was a joint proposal.
Yep.
But you know, by the nature of the CFA, the application came from the county.
Everybody's in compliance. Does that include, is that just small? Or
this is everybody, this list just encompasses the restaurants that we license through the health department.
Okay.
You know, there are, you know, many other places that serve. That we deal with those on a complaint basis. And what happens, in most of them that will go in, you know, see them or send them a letter, they'll come into compliance, we'll go away, and then they go right back to it.
You know, and the jail's in compliance?
Jail's in compliance. There's one, every public institution's in compliance. Mm-hmm. There is one school that we gave a waiver because they're completing their current
contract,
and then when they promised us when they go back out to bid, they're going to exclude the foam. It was the appropriate. We thought it was a reasonable thing to do.
Yeah. We don't want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have any money. There was no money set aside for it, and it's expensive. So.
Who did put this together?
That I did.
Great.
It was just for the committee.
In this case, it's Department of Health.
Did you find
a typo?
Is that what you did?
Oh no! Don't worry about that.
No. I literally did this an hour ago for you.
But
so.
Department of Health is responsible.
That's correct.
For it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah. So again, so the update this month is a lot different than the update you would have gotten 2 months
That's
ago.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And I do. I know that both Mary and I, at some point down the road, wanted to talk to you a little more about the idea of those stickers, to the pride in.
I think that we're finding that, you know, this is a lot of work, and it's we don't have a huge staff that does this. You know, again, this is kind of our first full year, and it was a lot of calls. Hopefully it'll get better over time. Mm-hmm. You know, we did run into a lot of operators that were, you know, upset about the law. They were, you know, they didn't appreciate that we did this. And, you know,
there's also confusion. You know, I was getting calls at some point about people, multiple restaurants that believed that they had to use compostable alternatives. And the compostable alternatives are very expensive and don't necessarily hold liquid so well. So, but that's not, the law doesn't require that. So that was a. You know,
I didn't list in this one page report the specific names of who we gave a financial exemption. But if anybody wants to talk about that, give me a call. Didn't feel like think it was appropriate to put that on the record.
Yeah.
But
no.
You know, but I know all of the restaurants by town and. You know, and it just didn't think appropriate.
And see, in my district, I talked to a couple of them and talked about the health aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So when they realized, you know, that it wasn't just us being like, oh, you can't do this, you know, and they were going to do, I mean, the one guy was like, I'm going to do whatever I want, you know. I was like, all right. They called me an hour later. I'm sorry if I was a jerk. I'm doing it. But he had to, the distributor did not have product for him. So he had to use up what he had and take another delivery, and then they switched
again.
We
worked with people. Eventually. Yeah. We weren't. You know, this isn't about hurting business. It's about an environmental initiative. We worked with people, and
it's a health issue.
Again, I can tell you today that they're all in compliance, and you're going to go to the restaurant tomorrow and get a piece of foam. You know,
because they were on sale.
Yeah, exactly.
Times are tough.
That's right.
Times are
tough.
But it's still such a marked difference than before the law. I mean, that's you know, we're moving.
I've gotten a lot of complaints, and I talk about the tinfoil swan that I always enjoyed as a child. When I'd go to, parents would take me to a nice restaurant, and the leftovers would go into a piece of foil shaped like a swan. And I think a lot of people have gone to the tinfoil swan here in Ulster County.
I just wanted to reiterate what Mary is saying. You know, any of these, all of these resolutions in this report have health impacts, but this one in particular, very few people realize that if they take a piece of pizza and reheat it in that styrofoam container in their microwave, that they're releasing carcinogens into that pizza. And so in the absence of being able to educate people about that, to take those carcinogens away, which is what we're doing with this law, and to do it in a way, when you do it across all the restaurants, it doesn't favor anybody or disadvantage anybody. So I really appreciate it as a pediatrician that there are kids that are getting pizza heated up in something that is safe, and instead of it, or and whatever it is. I mean, pizza is the prime example because that often gets served in styrofoam and often gets heated in styrofoam.
And chicken fingers.
And chicken fingers.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And tea and coffee.
Do you know that, Kathy, to that point, when Mary and I were both writing this law and working on gaining support and talking to people, them and Mary, you remember, the main pushback we got in the very beginning was that people like styrofoam because it can go in the microwave. And both of us were like, that was not even what we were bringing up. Yeah. Yeah. But that was
the
main...
They couldn't give it to me if it wasn't safe. And I'm like, oh, no, that's not true.
You know, just one last...
Well, now it is.
One last comment. You know, like, yeah. a lot of the pushback we got were from the very, very small operators. And the financial exemption took care of a lot of that. You know, it did. And
which is why it was in the law.
Right. I mean, but I'll be honest, there's one chain operator that pushed the limits, and they, you know, supposedly have switched. I don't know if that's the case, but I suspect they're not happy. They don't like that the materials that they can buy don't have their branded logo and coloring of the.
But is that required for their contract with their?
I don't believe so. In fact,
well, they're in compliance in other parts of the state.
That's the thing.
You know, there's no question that chain is in compliance.
When they argued for the unique packaging exemption. We were able to call another county that had the ban on polystyrene for the chain food establishments, and found they were in compliance, so it took care of that. So.
Yeah. The only place I've seen styrofoam is at the fire department's chicken barbecues.
Yep, that's a struggle.
A lot of people donated their stuff to the fire department.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, and you know they're supposed to be in compliance too, but the reality is if they applied for the exemption, in almost every case they would get it because they're not making $300,000.
And they're having their events on Friday night, Saturday, and Sundays, and who the staff is off those days, so who's going to go out?
Again, I don't think we're going to change the world.
But we're
making a dent, right? So
we have to continue the educational work.
Yeah, exactly. It's a process.
Yeah.
That's
when people understand that, then they'll make better choices. And as that becomes more popular, there will be cheaper alternatives.
Yeah. So again, I think we gave it a good try, and I think over a 3-month period, we got people into compliance, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
we could be totally out of compliance tomorrow.
They'll still
No, hopefully not.
Yeah. So.
But not again, totally out of compliance.
Well, no.
You never
they'll be.
You know, I had someone ask me a question. I said, "Oh yeah, they're in compliance. I just got a container." You know what I mean? So.
It's only been 3 months.
So everything that I've told you,
they just got one, and it was 2 months ago.
Yeah. So everything that I've told you was accurate as of the date that I put the number on the piece of paper.
I'm surprised how well it is, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, when I saw the 111, I was concerned, but then from that 111 from the first pass, a simple letter with a "this is the law and here are the fines" got it down to 12 like that. So it's a good
And
thing.
I think there was some misunderstanding about the waiver.
Mm-hmm.
First, you know, and they got denied, but I think they were kind of under the impression that all they had to do was fill it out.
Correct. But we worked with people. And again, we're not the IRS here at Ulster County, but we were able to, let people make a reasonable argument, and we took reasonable arguments and, simple documentation. It wasn't that hard, but we had to work with people, and it'll get better as time goes on.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Thanks. All right. We have two more resolutions. We'll go to Resolution 85, confirming appointment to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. David Gordon, Highland. Do we have a motion or a second?
I'll move.
Second.
You made a motion?
Yeah.
Okay. And Mary seconded it. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Resolution 86, confirming appointment to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. This is for Charlie Landy. So, is there a motion?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. That's it with the resolutions. I'd like to go quick to some new business. Legislator Green, if you want to take it. A project the county's embarking on.
May I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Holland,
like to James Halloran to come join me in just making you aware of a concern.
Have a seat at the table.
Yeah, you can sit if you want, Mr. Halloran. Or you can sit, whatever you're comfortable with.
James lives immediately adjacent to the proposed site for the fire training center. And I, over the last couple weeks, have been starting to get calls from neighbors. When this first went through Public Works, my main concern was, you know, that they not be using PFOS and that any pollution that's generated on the site not contaminate groundwater or move off the site. I didn't realize how immediately close it was to homes and farms and what effect it could have, particularly from smoke, because in order to do the fire training, they're going to be building fires to put out. And I had the privilege of taking that fire training back, I think it was in the fall or late summer, and it was amazing, and it's extremely necessary. I am totally 100% supportive of a fire training center. I'm just very concerned that, you know, we have authorized a design for that site, which will include a secret process. So there will have to be at least a preliminary review of the site. Whether there's going to be a full environmental impact statement, you know, I don't know how, what they will determine in that regard. But we have in front of us now a request to increase the RFP that was originally...
Not in front of us here tonight.
Not in front of this committee, but in front of the legislature. Yeah. And because, you know, prior to seeing the site, I was not aware of the environmental impacts, and James took me on a tour, just a very brief tour, and I could see how much wetlands are there, how much wildlife. It's just the site, and that's why I wanted to give him a chance to speak briefly and make folks aware, because I think we may need to put a pause on this and really take a very careful look at this location. It's only 11 acres, and it's basically wedged between the college and homes and I think some farms as well. But James understands the location better than I do.
Yeah. Hi. I've lived on Cottequill Road for 35 years. I'm an active interior firefighter with Cottequill Fire Department, and I was a past captain. And one thing I know we need in this county is a fire training center. Growing up, my neighbor was the fire coordinator for Rockland County, and I actually worked there when I was like 18 years old as a cleanup guy, a night watchman and stuff. But these facilities are like sort of industrial, okay? There's a fire tower, there's a pit for burning flammables, and then there's classrooms and stuff like that. And I feel like on Cottequill Road there, it's more, I mean, an ag kind of a rural environment with a beautiful view shed of Mohawk. It's probably one of the best views you can have. And to picture this industrial kind of a thing being put in there, it's just a bad fit. I mean, we definitely need one. We're so far behind not having one, it isn't funny. But this is totally just a bad location as far as numerous things. One being, if you Google 381 Cottekill, that's my house on Google Maps. That's my house. And you will see that this area is a sanctuary in the sense that it's got large cedar trees. It was never really developed by Francis Leggett. I don't know the whole story on this, but Francis Leggett donated the land to the college to be used only for college property. Now I'm seeing the word that it's county property, but if you look at any of the maps, it's always listed as also community college property. But anyhow, if you look at any of the large trees, the large cedars there, I've been back there where you'll see the barred owl fly through these cedars. That's where the bear hang out, is with a deer. When it's severe winters, that's where they go. So if you look at this, you will see on Google Maps, it's surrounded by farm fields, corn, wheat, totally all the way around. And what it is just this little clump there. And the part that I don't get as far as, now Madison's saying 11 acres, I'm calling it 50 acres, because that's what I was always told, and that's what the maps say. But a third of it is swamp. There's an actual natural spring I showed Madden where the water comes out. It could be dead of February, and that's where the animals go as for water during the... there's green algae there. I don't care how cold it is. But that's swamp. And then you go beyond that, there's some wooded trees, and if you get rain, the water just sort of sits there. It doesn't really run. And the rest is maybe a little bit of flat, but where the cedar trees are, the old cedar trees. And the rest is all hillside. I mean, it's a lot of hillside. I always thought that Francis Leggett gave to him because he never farmed it. That's why these big old trees are there. It was never good little farmland. It's rocky, it's hilly, it's got water, it's saturated, swampy. What I'll give you guys here is this will show you where the houses are and where the land is. If you pass that around to them, I'll give if they want. There's extras you can give to them, and that sort of tells. And where the X's are is where the homes are. Now, somebody who's been...
Sorry.
Yeah, that's me. That's Halloran. I don't know if I put the X around my name.
Yeah, right on your knee. And is this where we're talking about?
Yeah, so if I'll show you here, if I hold this up, this land here isn't even the college's property. This is Stiles. The Stiles, their property comes here. So if you look, you'll see all these farm fields. The reason why you won't see any on Google Maps is because there's a trailer. They call it Upper and Lowly Dudley Road. It goes down and it comes around. But this is their land. It's spring. If you see these lines, these are two creeks. This is where the hill comes down. It hits a creek back here, and this is another creek, and this is where the spring is, and this is swamp all here.
Which house is yours?
Well, I don't know where the proposal
right
is.
Right here.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Do you know where they're proposing putting it, Manna? Did they say in committee?
Well, no. We had that's the issue for me is that we haven't really looked at maps or the proposal or how it is going to affect the surrounding community.
I've been to the Woodstock Fire Training Center up there. You know, back in the day when I was doing interior up there, they burned tires. Thank God they don't burn tires anymore. But if you go there or the one in Warsing, it's down by the landfill. Normally these places are put in places where the Rockland County one, it's alongside the Palisades Parkway, if you're not familiar with... right past Mount Ivy. You don't even see it from the palace. Maybe with them, the trees aren't there. But you don't want these things usually by houses, like say, the Woodstock one and stuff. And normally, like, if you're going to be doing burning, like an LP burn, like tanks, these are hazardous materials. I mean, if you went by the emergency response guidebook, they would tell you have to have an evacuation at least a half a mile or so. These homes are within a half a mile. I mean, we're not far at all. I mean, I'm going to be looking at this building from my back window. And I'm not just being selfish, because I'm really speaking for the animals and stuff, that if you look at Google Maps, you'll understand that this is, all land that's used for farming around it. And this is sort of just a little bit of sanctuary that they do have. My main concern is there's 50 fire departments. When do they train? At night? And on the weekends. When am I home? At night and on the weekends. They're going to be burning automobiles. There's light pollution at night. Okay? And the other thing is, if you come down Cottekill Road, I don't know if you remember where old Arnold's garage is, but if you just go past this and go down, then Baston has his long drive road in the right, then you come down that hill, that's where the curb cut's supposed to be. That is the most treacherous hill
to be pulling fire trucks out on Conical Hill when you have that? That's where we have our most car accidents, even without vehicles hitting vehicles. It's just because of the way that the hill just pulls you down. But that's where the curb cut for this would be. And I'm thinking, okay, we're going to have lights during at nighttime. We're going to have smoke during on the weekends, 55 trucks. It's just a bad fit. And I really, if you looked at the site, you'd see that it's just doesn't fit in there.
A couple things. I would like to see the site. I mean,
I'm
like
more than welcome. If anybody come in, I can I'll show you. Exactly. The spring is an hour far from the road. The only thing I'd tell you is this, though.
Wear boots.
Tick spray. You got to spray. I mean, the place is just totally infested with ticks.
Let me ask a question.
Sure.
So you say you don't know where it's going to be. Is right now this piece of property is totally, it's all vacant? The whole thing, it's all vacant?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all fields.
Yeah.
Right, mostly fields, right? Not all fields.
The only field
is up front.
Is in the front. When people pull over to park sometimes, the trooper sits there and do the speed traps. That's the only field.
It's right, back from right after Mr. Baston's house, right?
Huh?
Right after Mr. Baston's house?
Right after Baston's.
Mm-hmm. On the right.
On the right. Side. That's the field there.
Right.
I mean, in talking with like I had Rod Baston come to my house yesterday, because we put the word out. I actually talked to the Bluestone Press because I said, you know, maybe you guys can find out what's going on here. But they think people are under the impression that they're putting it up at the college.
Right. That's what I thought.
Well, it's college property.
Right? But I just thought because we kept saying it.
No, because they wanted to do a fire informatics course, which I don't agree with that, because now they're doing away with the surveying course and they're getting rid of that, and we're competing with Dutchess County, who has the fire informatics course. So that's why I'm like, okay. Now, to make this even more complicated, you would think you'd have a sewer and a water district. There's no water. That's why when I fought the dorms back in the day, their idea is to tie this in with the pipeline when they finish the bridge in 213 and bring a pipeline in across the property for this facility and a college. So, I mean, it just seems like, I don't know what's really, that's another part of the equation, I guess.
Well, how much further is this facility from the college? I'm just totally confused.
It's not far. It's through the woods. It's a little bit of a walk.
Yeah, but not that far.
No.
Okay. Yeah, this is not connected to the college. There's probably three homeowners between the college. It's probably at least...
could be a quarter mile.
More than a quarter.
Yeah. Well, wait. When it goes, if you go into college and take that left.
Okay, let's just say a quarter of a mile.
Right. I know what you're saying. John, legislator have to...
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, this is all, this information, I think I have the same reaction as, you know, Legislative Hotels in Green. I mean, I have, as the gentleman said, I have a fire training site in my district in Woodstock, and it's been operating for a long time, as he mentioned, and, you know, you have never known a time when they've been operating there, and that should be the intent of these types of facilities, because it was, even in a town like Woodstock, you still have no idea that, and I think other sororities use it, other departments, towns use it. It's a pretty active training center in the northern part of the county, and people don't even know. And that's kind of, I think, obviously this is going to be a bigger scale, but I think that should be the intention, especially when we're talking about using such type of in terms of all our county property. It seems like an interesting parcel in terms of open space and land conservancy and those types of goals that, you know, I think we kind of pride ourselves in terms of a county to choose this lot. Because like you said, a lot of time, like in Woodstock, it's by the old Saugerties landfill. I mean, I feel like we must have siting that might be a little bit more less impactful on the local environment, and also just makes sense in terms of residential, because they do that. I mean, I've seen that, you know, it's car fires. They do really important trainings there, and really do, whether it's active car fires and all kinds of stuff. So I mean, we have, it's not like we don't have ground like space available. I mean, we just built a beautiful solar array and a very large parcel of land. I mean, I think there's other parcels to be found.
Yeah, I think we're probably all saying the same thing. I don't think there's, I imagine in the legislature that there is no argument about the importance of the project. But, I mean, I would even go further to say,
if we don't have property that's appropriate, if it proves that this is not appropriate for all the reasons mentioned, and we don't have property that's appropriate, then we need to endeavor to find appropriate property. I mean, just because it's something we own doesn't, by the virtue of it being public, make it proper.
Especially when it's a college.
Yeah, I just think...
aim towards the community.
And I definitely, to speak to my own naivete, just in the discussions of this, I'm not on the committee that Man is on, but as I've heard about this over months here and there, I always thought it was somewhere in the corner of the college, and I expected that there would be a full, you know, that there would be a full review, the seeker, full, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think this is what they're starting.
Yeah.
This engineering.
But I don't, I don't know.
Also, I find it, you know, interesting that we talk so often about one of the faults of our community college is inaccessibility.
These are all fields that go around it. Actually, this is the property here. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So you can see how they're just
talking about it's
just a really rough line.
Like from the fire department, from
farm field
to come
and
up there.
Down over here, if you went this way, you'd be coming out to Lucas by the rail trail. That's all Damon's. There's all farms here, and then when you come over to here, it's like, so this here is a clump. Okay, so this is the field. That's where the spring is. This is Stiles' property coming in. This is all downhill. This is all a slope. So this is the one area that's flat. But this is where those big cedar trees are that the, you know, and this is a brook, that's a stream, and that's a stream. There's two streams that come together. And my objection with the colleges, and just for you guys, in case you don't know, for the wastewater, they have a pipeline that comes down our road, and it just it goes into the Cottakill Creek. Now, I've had the water tested, and it's all E. coli. They have a Speedy's permit. The only thing that they're breaking... One thing that they're not doing is they're supposed to have a sign there to say that this is a speedy discharge, but they don't. They don't want to put a sign there because they don't want people to see that. So my take is, where are you going? They're going to get a speedy. Where are you going to do your discharge? You know, for your waters. I mean, I don't understand where they're going to run a pipe to do the same kind of a discharge speedies that they're doing for their wastewater up here.
Can we ask that you stay for a few minutes when the meeting is over? I just feel like there's other business.
Oh, okay. I'm fine with that.
And I think people are interested.
Well, I was very interested in everything you said before. I have solar panels. My wife, we have a hybrid, and she wants an electric car. So, and the only thing, as far as everything else you brought up, with.
And maybe we can even schedule a tour. But I just, you know, we have other items, and I don't want to keep.
Okay,
go ahead.
I'm just going to let you Well, we can discuss that too, or go to have a joint committee meeting. Okay, so now let's go to old business. Legislator Bartels, you want to talk about the plan? I know Bartels. I'm sorry, I should know it by now. I had a teacher, Mr. Bartle.
Potato, potato. It doesn't matter. Plastic bag legislation. So I didn't bring it back. I've had a crazy month. I talked to Rich just before the meeting, and we're going to sit down and talk about the EV spots, and we'll talk about the plastic bag at the same time and hopefully work something in. I mean, I think that Rich's comment from last month about, and I don't want to paraphrase, but about the relevance despite the governor's hold effectively and saying, you know, he's going to look at this as a holistic approach, and he's already commissioned the commission or whatever they're called and come back within the year. At last meeting, Rich said that that he felt that yes. shouldn't stop us from leading the way, and that there is relevance, and I agree. I mean, and I think that a lot of things do happen from the bottom up, and it's also a way to be very directly heard and to put pressure on the state. So I think it's really going to be about if we can get the support. So we have, as best I could tell, I'll go back and look over it now in this month, and you and I will meet. Because I think that there are a few real sticking points where we as a committee, I don't know that we're going to reach unanimous consent. I hope that we can, but I'm not sure.
there were a few things that we hadn't determined which way to go, and the ones that jump out at me are have to do with the charge for the non-plastic bags, mm-hmm. and what stores would be covered, whether it would be everybody, which would include beyond. There are models very even out west in progressive cities and counties where they only deal with effectively grocery models, places that sell milk, I want to say, is like the breaking point. So that would include...
Or square footage or something.
Yeah, and then some that add square footage on top of it, and then some, usually not the bigger places, but some then that just take in everything. Just as we see that New Paltz is a plastic bag ban on all stores, but it's a village. It's a little space. So I think we really need to think through how we're going to deal with that.
And a lot of people just exchange the one bag for the other, a lot of businesses.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Again, just not to, because we're going to have to debate this, but the thing I think that we really need to think through, I appreciate that the charge, and I think it was you, Rich, last time we were actually talking about it, that said maybe we just go with a very, very low charge.
But didn't that just get shot down, the charge in the city?
Well, the charge, what the city was doing wasn't a ban on plastic bags. It was just a charge for plastic bags. So it's a totally different model.
Okay,
my bad. But the idea that if we don't do a charge, I appreciate that there's the perception that it'll hurt senior citizens or that it's a harder habit to break, et cetera, that people don't want to pay for things they haven't been used to paying for, and I get all of that, and that's, in fact, why they put a charge. But I think that in no uncertain terms, if we do not put in a charge, who we will be hurting is businesses, because businesses will then have to just get paper.
But you know what? We just heard from Ken, mm-hmm. who said there some businesses took a financial hardship from going over. He said they let them go through the inventory because it was considerably more expensive mm-hmm. to buy. So we didn't make any provisions to help them out when we banned the
polystyrene
foam. We didn't make a provision to say, well, when people go to-go orders now, there's going to be a 5-cent charge or a 10-cent, you know.
Right.
And
they
he admitted it's a hardship on businesses that the costs are considerably more. I mean, are we going to then go through every law that we pass and say, mm-hmm. well, we have to make the person who is affected by the law whole?
Right. No, that's the point.
You
that's
know.
What we're going to have to debate, whether
right.
or not.
Right. Because then we got to go back and start from, let's go back to every law we passed in the last 10 years or 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit, but I think it could open a county for lawsuits to say, well, why are they compensated for a law? Why is the county making them get compensated?
I don't think either model would open us up for lawsuits because they're well tested the nation over, including in New York State. So,
but is it the right thing to do?
Right, but
I don't think the lawsuits should be an
issue for us because I just don't see litigation as the main. I mean, again, if they're well tested, they've been
not the ban law. Somebody suing to say, well, the county passed a law. Making me pay, which I'm okay with, but why aren't they paying?
No, that model is well tested the nation over. And
but you're
in
not
New York
listening
State.
To what I'm saying. Has anybody ever sued that it's that they've
consistency?
The consistency of the law, not the law itself. The consistency with other laws.
Compared
right,
to other
thank
laws.
Thank you.
I don't know.
I'm playing a devil's advocate, but
yeah,
they sued for the law, saying that's unfair, and it's been upheld, but. To me, it's kind of...
Like you can't do spot zoning.
You can't do spot zoning. Can you...
Do spot regulation.
Do spot regulation. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
But yeah, I think they're distinct. But we should bring... That's what I'm saying. I feel like this is going to be a process.
I don't think they'll be supporting the legislature. I'll tell you that right off the bat. If you charge
either,
people.
Either way. Oh, if you charge
people. Yeah.
You think the legislature will just support a ban?
I think a ban has much more chance of passing than charge people, my opinion.
Well, because going off of that, my interpretation of what happened with New York City's law is that the city representatives on the state level made an interpretation that any type of fee that they were imposing was not a fee but a tax. And then as we know, that we've come accustomed to is the home rule law that New York City did not have authority to implement that tax.
and the state therefore had the attorney to reject a tax like that. That's how they interpreted it, and that's how they were able to override and the and even in the assembly they passed it through both houses and got
right.
together. So I think that's the concern we would have, is that the under that precedent, there's nothing stopping any of our state reps from using that same interpretation and
right.
squashing.
Yeah, and when I read the
attempts that we have, so
yeah. Interesting.
I think it's a good point in terms of the precedent. When I read the governor's comment, can I just respond to
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, Mary. No,
when I read the governor's comment, one other thing he spoke to was the charge being, I think he called it a windfall to businesses, because the charge was written as 10 cents, and obviously the bags cost, the plastic bags that were banned cost a fraction of a cent. And the when we talk about charges, we're talking about offsetting real costs. But I think the tax issue, it does sound like a tax to
yeah.
me. I mean, it's just a different yeah. way, especially since it's just we're not taking the money. We're directing the money to go back to the businesses. So that might be an interesting
yeah, I mean, that's just the
angle.
How I interpreted the legislature.
For sure.
The way they maneuvered it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Mary had her hand up.
I'm sorry.
No, I forgot. No.
Sorry. But like Aldi's charges for that. Like if you don't bring your own bags, they
yep.
charge for
Sam's.
So, yeah.
But that's not a county law.
Yeah.
No. But I'm saying that.
She's supporting what
we're
you're
talking
saying
about
that people
if,
just
if,
do it. Yeah.
But, well, what I'm saying is it could be on
the business to do it.
To decide that they might sell bags if you forget your bag.
Mm-hmm.
That you have a bag available to buy, which really doesn't have anything to do with us. It would be more of a store.
Right.
A store option, which they kind of would have to do, kind of.
I think, yeah.
On some level, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then that would also mean we'd have to think about, can it be plastic? Or does it have to be, you know, if they're gonna provide a bag for a fee, if you forget your bag, then we're going to have to determine what that bag can be.
Right. The bans, I mean, all the bans ban plastic up to a certain weight. So the only plastic that's allowed are those very heavy, you can reuse them hundreds and hundreds of times.
Which
plastic.
Is kind of what
Ellie's
yeah. has with.
Yeah, those yeah, kind of woven plastic.
Heavier. Yeah.
Well, we can discuss this. We don't
yeah,
need to discuss
that. I think
so
maybe I can, I'll interface with Jonathan on getting an update of what's happening at the state level because he's connected to that. So, because I know that commission I don't know what it's officially called, but that group was appointed.
Oh, yeah, the governor put out something on it. I'll find it for
yeah,
you.
But I don't know what's
like a random group of different people.
That's what it seemed like to me, too. yeah.
Okay.
But we'll find out where
you're
at, too.
Yeah, and we'll talk.
Yep.
Okay, let me go to the next. Climate Smart, Legislative Green, you want to give us a quick update?
Yeah, it was, our last meeting was basically people just reporting off. The one thing that there was interest in was understanding more about the family court renovation to be sure that it's...
Oh, you sent some emails.
Yeah, that any green building or renewable energy or energy efficiency... so we have, formally invited Bob Sudlow or whoever he wants to bring to the next meeting. And we're also having the Clean Energy Communities, which is also housed in the Hudson Valley Regional Community, Regional Council. The Clean Energy Communities staff are going to come and talk about the progress that's been made now that there's money going to communities on a somewhat competitive basis. Ulster County and Kingston are doing really well, but we wanted to see where we are with our other towns in Ulster County. And we only have one city, but the city and the county are doing really well in that regard in terms of meeting what they call high energy impacts. So those are things that are coming up. In the future, Jonathan, can you think of anything from the last meeting?
That was not the last meeting.
That's right. You were excused.
Yeah.
and you know, just an aside, but a couple of people have volunteered to take notes, and I'm hoping that's helping Fawn a little bit. But we are looking for a regular volunteer, you know, a college student to do an internship or a senior that's sure. retired that will come to every meeting and take notes and get them to Fawn, even if they're handwritten notes, having,
yeah,
you know,
no,
some,
definitely.
Rather than her having to listen to so many long conversations in addition to all the other committees and responsibilities that she has. But that's it on Climate Smart.
Okay. Can you give us one more update?
Yeah, I can update you.
So
we're coming close to the final presentation. We should be presenting a draft to the UCRA later this month. It's been difficult to get everybody together. It's been a kind of moving target through the holiday season
sure.
and into the beginning of the year.
Right.
But it's gonna get done. So we're close, and then we'll bring it to this committee too.
Great. Taking on a lion's share.
Yeah,
it's this right now.
Can I add one thing?
Yeah, sure.
You know, there's a general hope that we'll be bringing facilities closer to home and doing less exporting, whatever that ends up looking like, which is ultimately the RRA's decision and then comes back to the county. But also that there be some kind of an ongoing committee that includes members of the legislature, haulers, just the way this mm-hmm. committee was structured as an advisory group to the RRA. And so I'm just mentioning that so that, you know, it's not a surprise
okay.
when it comes up.
Can I bring up something different?
Of course.
But it's kind of new business.
Sure.
It's kind of old business. So it's old new business. But I just, man, reminded me. We, the Recycling Oversight Committee, which is required by the source separation law, has not been seated in years. I was on the last, Man and I together, that's when I met Man, and we're on the last sitting board. And I think it's this committee's probably mm-hmm. responsibility to make the recommendations. So maybe we can look at, get a listing of the membership and reach out and try to get people interested in, you know,
have our online thing now too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a committee that when we were on it, we were writing revisions to the law. So we met fairly regularly. It was myself, Manna, and I'm trying to remember Steve Noble. It was a group of us, right?
I don't Laura.
Know. Laura. So it's a lot of this. There's some of the same players in the Solid Waste Management Improvement Committee, but I think both because the law requires it and because it's kind of critical that they're seated just if something happens. They make the recommendations to the RRA as to regulated recyclables, and their approval is required
so
if anything's going to be...
they're not meeting any...
There's nobody appointed. It's just... Right. It's completely inactive. It's empty seats. So...
is that on the website, that committee? Would it be on it?
I'd have to check. It may be.
So whether it is or isn't, maybe for next month we could have the list. Maybe Fawn before next month, can we circulate the list of the makeup? It's specific, like others. You know, it's representatives, one representative for the recycling.
It must have been an enabling.
Yeah, for sure. Recycling coordinators, there's members at large, members from the public, members from the legislature, mm-hmm. et cetera. And maybe we can start to... just endeavor to get that filled,
we can reach out,
get it going.
It might even make sense to combine the two since that's maybe not.
Well, I don't think we technically can combine it right now because it's in, I mean, we'd have to
this
change
one
the law.
Is, that's right.
Yeah, but, and I don't know how one would, but I think the fact that we have a lot of interested people on the Solid Waste Management Improvement Commission, maybe some of those people would want to serve knowing that it wouldn't be the same kind of rigorous commitment, you know. I don't remember what the minimum requirement. I feel like it's as little as a couple times a year require. You know, is what's required. So, and then if something comes up and it's an engaged group that's looking into doing more, then they can meet more. They can. It's up to them. They can meet as much, but they need to be in place in case they need to be called on.
Right. No.
So we should.
All right.
Should
so. you don't mind looking for
that? No, I can get that and I'll get it and send it.
Yeah, it'll be super easy to pull it up, for sure.
And do you mind giving us a list of, like, if you can find it, who was the last membership?
Recently,
what people
saw the list of who had been on it. And Mary is away this week, because Mary will have it at her fingertips if it could wait till Monday when Mary gets back.
Yeah, it's good.
We have the session and everything this week, but because Mary has...
We even had a student, remember?
Has that in her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thanks.
We have that wonderful... I have to give a plug to Acelin, what Mary's been doing, trying to organize our committee assignments, and the public can go on the legislative website and see what committees might have openings coming up and apply for things they might be interested in, see who's on it. They can look at different individuals and see what committees they serve on.
That's great.
It's very good, and it like spells out what the requirements are and for the different seats. And Mary's done a really great job setting it up. We're advertising it heavily in our directory, which should be here in a day or two.
Oh, wow.
We'll have it before session.
Okay.
I've been promised.
Nice. Okay. David, do you have anything?
I mean, the only thing that may be of interest coming up is Earth Day on the 22nd.
Sure.
New Paltz has a big fair at the Reformed Church there. They had 50 or 60 different tables and stuff last year, and they plan the same this year.
Okay.
Woodstock, I know, has Earth Day celebrations also.
So what day is the 22nd? A Thursday?
A Saturday.
A Saturday.
Wow.
And the New Paltz Climate Action Group has a bus organized to go to Washington for the climate march.
On the 22nd?
I think
well,
on the
22nd. Is it full?
No, they've been sending around notices about it again.
Thanks.
And then I think on the 29th, when there's that science one, I think they're doing one on the walkway.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's going to be really nice.
That'll be packed. Too many people for me.
There's a big walkway.
I don't like crowds anymore. The older I get, the less I like crowds.
It's
big crowds anyway.
You know, it's a mile and a half long.
Yeah, but they still can get 5,000-6,000 people on that thing.
And they come from both sides. I'll grab it.
Yeah, right. It's not that wide. It's wide, but
I just picked up maps of the trails around the city of Poughkeepsie. They're dated to 2016. Somebody was getting rid of them, but the maps inside are still good. So I grabbed handfuls of them and put them out in the hallway.
They're amazing.
Of course, and then it's going to be coming to a Lowe's near me, very soon.
Okay. Motion to adjourn? Any other
notes?
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Sorry, I was late.
Thank you for everything.
We are adjourning.
So funny, I was sitting in my parking lot. I'm like, where is everybody? I'm on the phone.
7:40.